Welcome to iDeveloper Live, episode 4. It's great to see at least a few of you, 20-odd online at the moment, to listen to the show. It's great to have you on. No John this week, but our guest will more than make up for the lack of a co-host. Mr. Justin Williams, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know if I can keep up with John, but I will do my best.
Well, any man who can have a successful radio career, music career, and application career all at the same time can keep up with John, I assure you.
All right, we are 30 seconds in and we've got the Bieber reference out. Yes.
Yes, we just thought we had to get it done. So, before we get going and look at the news, just remind us, other than being a mega music star around the world, who you are.
I am Justin Williams. I'm the crew chief of Second Gear at secondgearsoftware.com. Lately, the app I've been working on the most is Elements, which is a Dropbox-powered text editor. And then in the past, I was on the old Late Night Coco show talking about Calendar Store because of my Today application, which is a nice little daily calendar for the Mac.
Sorry, it helps if I keep my mic turned on if I want anybody to hear me, doesn't it? You see, you'd have thought I'd have known how to do this by now. okay, so we're going to start off this week with the news. Justin, you got anything that's sort of taken your interest this week?
Well, there's a couple things that have kind of piqued my interest, and probably the biggest one is the fact that I think we're on our third or fourth GM of iOS 4.2. Which I don't know if I've ever seen them go through so many GMs for iOS. The most interesting thing I've seen about it was John Syracuse said yesterday that it's the new, I think, OS 7.5.4 or something like that.
Yeah, it feels like it's going on forever anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have you installed the betas on your iPad? I never ran into the Wi-Fi issue, which is what I was like, I've never run into any of the issues that it seems that they're fixing according to the rumor sites. It's been fine for me.
Yeah, I mean, that, I guess, but I guess even if it's a reasonably rare Wi-Fi issue, with Wi-Fi being such a sort of core part of the device, if they know there's an error there, they want to get it fixed before it goes out.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just, there's so many good things in 4.2, especially for the iPad. Like, as someone who has an iPad app, I want as many of my customers to be on iOS 4.2 because the experience is so much better on the iPad because of how great it is on the iPhone. I use my iPad a lot more now that it's not running OS 3 because I have the backgrounding and all those other fancy features in there. So it's just, I'm hoping that they're going to get out there officially for everyone that didn't pay their $99 for a developer account or find some other nefarious way to download it soon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What the demographics of an iPad user? I mean, the iPhone is used by literally anyone, and I don't know. I guess because iTunes does the update, maybe people keep reasonably up to date. I don't know. I mean, I've not looked at any stats on that. Do you think the iPad is a slightly different type of user who's likely to upgrade straight away, or you're just going to be suffering? This is going to take a long time for it to go through.
I don't know. I'm conflicted on that. When the GM first came out a couple weeks ago, I said just in passing that I was halfway tempted to pull the Elements 1.5 release that I had in review and change it so that it just required iOS 4 out of the gate and just saying to hell with having OS 3 support. And Craig Hockenberry chimed in and said that would be the dumbest thing you've ever done because people don't update their devices. And so I can see that there's probably a subset of people that have never plugged their iPad into their Mac or their PC to update it. But I think those are probably the people that aren't paying for software either. And my retort to him was that anyone that is downloading a Dropbox-powered text editor is kind of nerdy and is probably updating as soon as it's available. So I'm not going to change my requirement for being iOS 4.0 until a major release, but I'm hoping, at least in my case, for the apps that I've released, that most people are going to start upgrading to the new release as soon as possible. But I don't use any of the statistics programs like Flurry or whatever other ones are out there in my app, so it's kind of hard to know what the demographics are.
Yeah, well, I guess you're in a good place saying with the Dropbox app, although I know loads and loads of people who are just totally non-tech who are sort of getting into Dropbox in order to keep their work and home computers in sync, and so, you know, that may not necessarily be true anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting to see ever since Dropbox came out with that API and more apps started using it, it seems like the curve has shifted from it being a power user's tool that anyone who reads Gizmodo or Lifehacker downloads to. Even my dad knows what Dropbox is. I don't know if he's signed up for it, but he at least is aware that this service exists out there for putting all of your files up on the internet.
Yeah, well, let's maybe move on to something that is maybe a little more widespread than Dropbox. It's them angry birds.
Yes, the perturbed birds are not having such a great experience on Android, it seems. Which, is that a shock to you, Scotty?
To be honest, I don't care. Should I say that?
I care because I don't use Android exclusively or anything, but I like to pay attention to what the other platforms are. And I understand the sentiment that they're going through because just in dabbling with Android development, just out of curiosity, it seemed obvious that this was going to be a problem because there's just so many devices out there and there's so many different hardware specifications that you have to work with. It just seems chaotic that there would be no good way to get an application to work entirely across the whole spectrum of Android devices. And I mean, I feel sorry for them in a way, but I also don't because they're making a lot of money and that kind of comes with having a really, really popular application.
Yeah, I mean, the downfall of Windows Mobile, you know, which was around years ago, long before the iPhone, I mean, not at the same level, was people just, you know, the range of devices just made it virtually impossible to give a decent experience. You know, and that was just, you know, a single OS platform, just like Android. So, you know, it doesn't matter how much they say, well, we'll, you know, allow for this or allow for that. The reality is if you're going to have loads of different screen resolutions, loads of different processors, loads of different, you know, way things that things can do, at the end of the day, it's not going to be as good as if you just can put it on one platform and say, that's it.
Right, and Microsoft learned that lesson because with Windows Phone 7, their new platform that just came out, they have required hardware specifications. So if you're a handset manufacturer like HTC or LG, Microsoft has, I think right now they have two different specifications that says, okay, you need to have a gigahertz processor, you need to have at least 8 gigs of storage, you need to have this graphics chip, and if you do that, then you can install Windows Phone 7 on the device and we will certify it. Otherwise, sorry. So the benefit for this is that developers know that their apps are going to work on each of the pieces of hardware because other than the actual form factor and some of them having a physical keyboard, everything is the same. The other benefit, of course, is that Microsoft is going to be able to handle the updates much like Apple can, whereas Google Android phones are kind of at the behest of carriers and manufacturers to get those updates out there. So it seems like Windows Phone 7 is kind of a mishmash of the good things about iOS, the good things about Android put into one. It's just they have no market share. I don't know anyone other than my co-host on IRQ Conflict, my little podcast I do, who has a Windows Phone 7 phone, which is really awkward to say.
All right, I'm going to have to move on because you have just said Windows far too many times for this podcast. And yeah, we're not going to be able to mention it for at least 2 years now, the amount that you've put in. You're getting too used to speaking your co-host and feeling quite comfortable with this word. You need to get back and just get a bit more on edge with it, Justin.
Need to be
so
cleansed.
Let's move on.
All right, let's
iAds.
Move on.
iAds. Coming to Europe, I understand you use iAds, yeah?
Yeah, I'm using iAds in a new application I released last week. It's called Shareables. It's an app that I wanted personally just as a quick way to get a URL that I find in mobile Safari. So if I'm reading Engadget or just a random blog I go to, I can tap a bookmarklet. It opens up this Shareables application and shrinks it and allows me to post it to Facebook or Twitter or even to a text message to a friend if I want to. And I didn't want to sell the application for a variety of reasons as an actual paid application because I wanted more people to use it. And I thought it would be a good experiment just to play with the freemium model. And iAds seemed to be the easiest way to get into that market. So I'm excited to see iAds go to Europe because right now anyone outside of the States that uses Shareables doesn't see any ads because I'm not using AdWorld or any other service that allows you to rotate between different ad services. But the more that iAds expands across the world, I think the better it's going to be for that platform. And I think you're going to see more developers embrace it as they can get more clicks and more taps, is the iOS word to say, more taps in their applications for iAd banners rather than having to use AdMob or any of the other services that are out there.
I mean, when we were preparing for the show, you mentioned about a third, is it you say, of the top grossing apps in the App Store are based on the freemium model. Is that right?
Yeah, there was an article in GigaOm, I think last week, where it said that a third of the top applications, the top grossing applications in the App Store are freemium. And these are the apps like Farmville or WeRule or any of those types of apps that have consumable in-app purchases. And that's where they're making the money. So you download these games and you can play them for free as much as you want. But if you want to get extra water or extra corn seeds or whatever you do in these games, I've never really played them, you pay 99 cents or $5 or however much it is to get a set amount of this stuff that you can use. And then when you run out, you have to buy more. And that's a really good business model if you can get it. I mean, I'd love to find a way to have an application of mine have a consumable in-app purchase, but the kind of software I build just doesn't really tailor to that. But the freemium model is something that is interesting to me just with the ad-based stuff. I mean, I've thought about doing unlockable features, for example. So in shareables, one of the things I'm actually considering, and I'd love to get some feedback on this, is right now the application is pretty bare bones in that it has sharing services and it has ads. And one of the things I've considered is having one, an unlockable to disable the ads, obviously, because some people don't ever want to see ads in their life. And then if I add other features down the road, for instance, having the ability to add your own custom Bitly API key and password so you can shrink your URLs and track them on your account, have that as another unlockable feature, because it's a pro feature. And if you want to use it, you can pay for it. But if you don't, you don't have to worry with it.
So you're looking at maybe even unlocking individual features by paying as opposed to just having free and pro version?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any app that does that, but it seems like it might be a decent business model if you've got useful features and you want to just have this sort of a la carte sort of mentality with your application rather than just saying, all right, you can have free or you can have $5 or $10 to unlock everything. Here's something in the middle. You can just, if you want to disable ads, it's $3. If you want to add this feature, it's $2 or whatever it is. The only app I've seen that, actually, now that I think about it, the only app I've seen that does that is, it's called TripDeck. It's by the guys who did Flight Track Pro. And they have I used that when I went to Austin last week, and they have unlockables for $4 each to turn on push notifications. I think another one to track some specific sorts of flight statuses. And they had four different unlockables. So the app is free, but there's about $12 or $15 worth of unlockable features in there. And I bought all four of them because they were useful, but it seemed like a decent business model.
So you feel that maybe if it had just been $15 for the pro version, you might have said, nah, that's too much. But because it was this thought of, well, yeah, that's worth $3 and that's worth $3, that you find that more enticing?
In a way I did, but I mean, there's always that concept of you slightly feel nickel and dimed by it. You're like, all right, I paid $3 for this. Oh, you want another $3 for this? Okay. So I think it'd be nice if they had all right, you could unlock one by one, or you can unlock all of them for $10. I mean, I think that's a nice kind of compromise. So you can say unlock everything for one set price, or if you just want this feature and this feature, just unlock each one of those specifically and then don't worry about the other ones because you have no use for them. But even though the iPad and the iPhone are kind of, they've set their place in the mobile market as kind of the dominant forces right now, it is still really young and people are still kind of feeling out the best way to build businesses on it. I mean, right now, my business is primarily selling a $5 piece of software, but I'm still interested in seeing if there's a way to do apps, having part of it be free and then having part of it be paid without having to do two different applications.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Maybe we'll dig into that a little bit more when we talk about how you're balancing your business and some of the things that's going on. Right, I think that's enough of the news. We've spoke about ads. I'm just going to do a quick ad myself because we have a wonderful show sponsor in the form of RemObjects. Check them out at www.remobjects.com. They produce the RemObjects SDK, which is a great name considering their name is RemObjects, which allows you to do remoting. It's all about you can use SOAP or custom protocols, about speaking to servers that are running out in the cloud from inside a Mac application. Now, the client code, the client controls and everything that come for the RemObjects SDK on the Mac OS X platform are all native Cocoa. There's none of this sort of cross-platform stuff. It's all been written natively to connect out. Now, there is no server-side OS X stuff at the moment, but then again, Mac OS X server is not the most popular deployment platform out there, so you're more likely to be losing Linux, and I'm not going to say the other platform, just because Justin said it far too many times already. If you've got anything that you need to do where you need to talk to something in the cloud, or there's Data Abstract, which is their briefcase model tool where it allows you to have offline and then online data and keeping it in sync, which is anyone who's tried to do that themselves will just know that, you know, that is a complete pain in the backside, I think is the only way to describe it. And you really don't want to be doing it yourself unless you have no other choice. You can download demo copies of it and get hold of the documentation and give it a go. So it's absolutely no risk. We'd love it if you went and checked out their webpage, because then they would continue to love us and they would continue to sponsor the show. And then everybody's happy. What more could there be? So that's RemObjects at www.remobjects.com. And we want to thank them for being a sponsor of, well, anything we do, really. Thanks, guys. So, Justin, we're gonna talk a little bit about what's going on with you at the moment and some of the issues you face and some of the ways you handle it. But before we do that, okay, people may have heard you on a previous show and you've hinted some of it already, but just, you know, give us the sort of 2-minute history of Justin, just so we get an idea of who you are, where you're from, and what you're up to.
Okay, the 2-minute history of me. So the personal history is that I'm a single person developer here in central Indiana, just working on my Mac and iPhone stuff out of the house. The personal history, I started Second Gear when I graduated from Purdue, and I started it as a Mac development shop. And I started doing that, and it's been going well. And then obviously the iPhone came out, and I was like, well, everyone's getting rich on the iPhone because the iPhone is the new gold rush and we're all swimming in money. This is going to be great. So I put out a couple iPhone apps that I spent a lot of time on. They didn't sell so well. I got frustrated with a lot of the policies around the first year of the App Store, with the Google Voice was being forever studied up until last week. I had a hard time getting paid by Apple, and it just, the wait times for reviews, there was all kinds of issues that they've slowly improved on over time, but I had my fill of it. I ended up selling off my applications and swearing that I would never, ever work on this platform again because it is this Satan's spawn. I'm going to go back to this happy place called the Mac where I have all the freedom. You all have fun over there in phone land. I'm going to be where the big boys are on the desktop. And that worked out pretty well for a while, but then the iPad came out and I started getting the itch that, well, I really want to build for this iPad thing, because while I'm comfortable ignoring a phone, the iPad feels like something a little bit different. And so I stuck my foot in the water with Elements back in the summer, and that took off really well. So I've jumped all in right now, and I'm back. I'm doing both platforms now. I still prefer the Mac for a variety of reasons, but it's hard to deny that the iOS platform has gotten a lot better over the past year and a half than it was when I said I was never using it again.
Okay, so are your products iPad only, or are they iPad and phone?
Two of them are universal. I'm a big fan of universal apps. So Elements came out as a universal app from day one. Markdown Mail came out as an iPhone app to start, but now it is a universal app. And then Shareables, which is the new application, that's iPhone only, and it's probably going to stay that way just because I've never had the inclination to want to use it on my iPad, and I haven't really had any request for it. So I'm bigger fan of the iPad for development just because it gives you a lot more options and more real estate to play with, but some of the apps that I've built, like Elements, I use a lot more on my phone now, which I never imagined that I would, just because it's, besides being a really good writing app that syncs, I'm using it a lot as a notes app as well.
So you went from a man who was not just saying online, but I think stood on a platform and said, I'm never going to use this thing, develop for this thing again, the phone, but the iPad enticed you back, yet it seems that your product range is phone heavy rather than iPad heavy. So, I mean, what is it that, you know, I mean, you said you saw you liked the form of the iPad, but was there more than that that brought you back? Was there some part of the technology that you could now do that you couldn't do before? Was it just that you realized you were wrong, if you may never want to admit that, of course? Was there just actually you now had the app idea that you thought was going to do well and you didn't before? Was it a mixture? I mean, it's a big swing, isn't it? Because you've gone from saying, I'm never touching the phone again, to actually you are more of a phone developer than an iPad developer with the product range you have. And I don't know about how time you spend, but definitely in the number of products.
Yeah, so it is a bit of a mixture, I think. The funniest thing I got was when I was at NS Conference in February of this year, I had so many people come up to me and go, what are you doing here? You hate the iPhone. And so that's true. And I did for a while, but the iPad, it opened up a lot more ideas for productivity applications. Second Gear, all of our apps are productivity applications. And yeah, you can do that kind of thing on the phone, but you can do it a lot easier and a lot more with a lot more options on the iPad. OmniFocus on the iPhone is a great application, and I use it all the time just for quickly inputting something that I want to remember. But OmniFocus on the iPad, I use that all the time because I can. It feels like I'm using it much the way I would use it on my Mac. It's a lot more convenient and easy for me to go through and triage what task I need to do and kind of review each of my projects and clear off stuff that I don't need to do, add stuff that I need to do. There's things like that. Elements, which is my Dropbox text editing app, I built that basically because I write a weekly column for a newspaper, and I never wanted to take around my Mac with me whenever I went home. And I could sit there and I could type it out on my phone, but it just felt like with the iPad and with the external keyboard, it feels like it's as close to a real computer as you can get with iOS and a mobile platform. So there's a lot of different variables with it. I can't really say there's exactly one, but just I didn't want to end up 5 years from now being that one guy who's just staying back there and saying, oh, you guys are all over there now, but I'm over here where we have freedom, the Mac. There's nothing evil there. There's no app store here. Oh, wait, there is now. So I think I made the right decision. I don't regret stepping away from the iPhone platform for a while because I think it gave me a really good perspective to come back into it. But I'm glad that where it is right now is much improved from where it was a year and a half ago.
Okay, that's really interesting. Now, a bit that I'd like to focus on just for a little bit, is someone who has a chaotic life and is juggling, you know, more things ever than I can keep in the air, and I end up dropping most of them. You say quite openly, you use the corporate speak "we" for your company, but as you said at the beginning, you're a one man company, so you're a one man "we." But you've got five products. I mean, how do you sort of, you know, How do you manage that? Is it, do you say, I'm going to work on this today, that tomorrow? Do you do it by release? How do you juggle five products?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't know how I juggle them yet. I say we because while I am the sole developer, I do have people that help me with design, and then I have the always awesome Ash Ponders helping me on the support side. But yeah, how I develop the apps, it's kind of just what do I feel like doing right now. So I just pushed out an Elements release this week, and then I just shifted my focus and said, all right, I got that out of the way. Now we need to get some updates done on Shareables because there's these features I want to add there. And then once that's done, I move on to Markdown Mail. And so the nice thing is that with the iPhone and the iPad apps is the development time is a lot less than it is whenever I want to push out an update for the Mac, because there's a lot less variables you have to deal with. It's a lot more focused platform. So it's easy to get those updates out there. But as one developer with five applications, I do feel kind of the crunch of having, I feel like the Mac apps are being neglected, especially with the Mac App Store coming soon. I mean, that whole thing has pretty much thrown my schedule to hell, because I had pretty much planned out, all right, I know what I'm going to do for the next 3 months. And once those are done, then I'll start focusing on getting some updates to the Mac apps. But now with that out there, I'm kind of like, well, where am I going to find time to get the Mac apps ready to go in the Mac App Store? So I wouldn't recommend having five products, but my justification for it was I basically had three ideas in my head from my little vacation away from the platform, and I wanted to just get them out there so that I could just say, all right, these are out there. I want to use them. I can use them now, and they're done. And we'll see which ones are successful and which ones aren't.
There's a couple of questions coming up in the chat, and I'll get to those in just a moment. So I'm not ignoring you, chat room. But you know, a question I don't think I've heard asked before, but maybe I'm just sort of, you know, not in the right circles to heard it asked. One of the things that people really look for in a Mac app is to know that the developer is committed to it. There's a long-term future for it. On the iPhone, apps seem far more, especially the iPhone, far more throwaway. So do you feel it's more acceptable to, or do you feel in the mode of, you know, I can develop this, it'll be out there for 12 months, it'll probably then break off and I'll just let it die. And that's perfectly fine because the platform, you know, just allows that.
Yeah, I do. I think that apps have a finite shelf life. And I say that knowing that I don't think that all apps have a finite shelf life, but I think there's a lot of apps that are in the App Store that are developed that way. And I in a way, I do tend to develop in that sort of mindset, in that when I build an application, I build basically the core functionality that I need to get it out there and see if it'll stick. And so that's basically with shareables. I knew that in my mind, all right, I need to have it so that you can install this bookmarklet, so you can launch the application and then share it with a couple of services. We'll get those in there, we'll throw it out there, and then we'll see what customers want. If they download it and they start sending me feedback, all right, well, then I know what I need to add in there. Same with Elements. I basically got it out there with the features that I needed personally, and then I was inundated with people telling me, oh, how can you ship a 1.0 that doesn't do this, 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 and this? And then I knew, all right, so this is resonating with people. This is something that I can build on. But there are applications. If I put out an application tomorrow and it didn't sell really well, I'd be perfectly fine pulling it 6 months from now and saying, all right, this one didn't work, let's take it off the shelves. I mean, if you go into Walmart, there's always going to be products that, I don't mean to compare the App Store to Walmart, sorry, but if you go into a store like that, you're not going to see the same products every time you go into the store over the span of a year. Some products are going to sell really well, some aren't. So if you've got a product that isn't selling really well, why keep it out there? Just pull it, put your resources into something else, and then move to that. One thing I've always found, though, is that in any product I build, even if it isn't a success, I've always found a way to reuse some of the code in another product. So I never really feel like anything's too much of a failure, because there's always a case where I can use the code in something else, or it's in, at the least, it's a learning experience.
Do you think actually the platform allows for that as well, because as you just said, actually, because it's more focused, you can tend to produce stuff a lot quicker. I mean, can I ask, shareables, how long did you spend on release one?
Let's see. I'll just go through each of them. Elements took about a month to build. Just probably should have taken about 2 or 3 weeks, but I was trying to ramp back up into the platform. Markdown Mail took about 2 days, and shareables took, let's say 3 or 4. Just to get the 1.0s out. And that's kind of about a week is what I want to spend on any new application that I want to put out on the iPhone platform, unless it's something that's really extravagant, but I don't really have the resources or time to do anything big and extravagant. But spending about a week, spending some money on getting some decent design work done, and then putting it out there, that gives me enough that I can know if something's going to resonate or not, and if I need to put more resources into it. Once I knew that Elements was going to be successful, I've put 3 or 4 months of de- de- of development time into it since then, and countless amounts of design work into it to keep improving the application, because I know that it has a really big audience and I know that they have features that they want. So I definitely see that as kind of an application that could have a long shelf life. But if you look at a lot of the games on the App Store or any of the 99-cent knockoff apps on there, those aren't applications that I buy and that I expect to be continuously updated for the next 5 years. I don't think there's a viable business model there, unless you are the Angry Birds or the Doodle Jumps of the world, who you're just bringing in millions upon millions of dollars, $1 at a time, and you can afford to do that. But most iPhone developers aren't making millions and millions of dollars.
So, I mean, just looking at those times, I mean, you said the longest of any of those was Elements, which you spent a month on and said that was a bit too long. You know, I mean, you couldn't even begin to produce a Mac app in a month, really. I mean,
oh, absolutely okay. Not. No, I mean, that's the thing that concerns me about the Mac App Store is people are talking about how it's going to be a race to the bottom. And I don't think it's possible, because anyone that has built a Mac application knows that I think it takes at least 75 days to build a quality, polished 1.0 of even a basic application. When I built Today One back in 08, I think that took me about 3 months to get that first release done, and that was working on it full time. I could probably get that down to 75 days, but I don't think there's any way to build a Mac application with all the parts that you have to take into account, all the different extra functionalities on the Mac compared to the iPhone that you have to take into account. There's no way to shorten that development time, and that's why I don't think you're going to see that race to the bottom. I do think that prices are going to change a little bit when applications start shifting entirely to the Mac App Store, should that happen, but I don't think you're going to see applications like OmniGraffle or a cooking application out there for a dollar, just because I don't think it's financially viable.
So you spoke about even when you're trying to I'm going to call them throwaways. You put a week into something and then, you know, you're just going to see if it goes. But even for something like that, do you believe the reason that stands a chance of working is because you get a designer involved straight away? And so even though it might not have a lot of functionality, it looks good from day one.
Yeah, and I don't know if I like the word throwaway for it. I mean, I get the sentiment before, but yeah, you don't want to just put something out there that does like one thing and it has nothing else. You want to have an application that people at least get the purpose of it and has the functionality enough that it is actually useful and they can request features beyond just stuff that it should have. I think my biggest mistake with Elements 1.0 is I underestimated the amount of people that would want to delete stuff on the device, just because to me, it was, well, it's not that much effort for me to just go on my Mac because I'm sitting here all day and drag the file from the folder on my Mac into the trash can. But I didn't, being someone who sits at home all day as a hermit working all day, I didn't really think that, oh, well, there's people that are out on the go and they want to delete that stuff. So you want to get the basic feature set in there, but you don't want to get more than that in there. So get it so that it's an actual useful, productive application. Put it out there. And then see if it resonates, because I don't want to see any developer ever say that, oh, I spent 6 months of my life on this application and countless thousands of dollars on design work, and I put it out there and I sold 10 copies because it didn't get it picked up by the App Store front page. I didn't get very much publication. I didn't get linked to on Daring Fireball. And I'm really in the hole now. The way that the App Store is set up and kind of the lottery mentality it has, I don't see that much of a benefit to putting all of your eggs in one basket at once, spending all of your time and all of your resources on one thing for an enormous amount of time, and then kind of just putting all that risk in there and then realizing, oh, this didn't really resonate as well as I thought it would.
Okay, that's cool. Now, I'm just going to pick up on a question from the chat room. There's a question. Do you think it's the relationship or the how do you phrase it? Has dealing with Apple become easier now than when you first gave up? Because I know you said part of the reason that you moved away from the iPhone platform was because actually some of the dealing with Apple was such a pain in the backside. Is any of that changed, or you're just living with it?
It's changed a little bit. There's a lot of things that are better about it. It's still frustrating in some aspects. So one of the big things I had when I was on the platform before was I could never get paid. I never saw a dime of the money I made, because back when the App Store came out, you had to pretty much have all of your money wired from every country you made money in, wired into the wired to your bank account. And so my bank supported wire transfers, and I put in my Swift code and all those other things, and Apple always came back and said, sorry, this code isn't valid. And so I would go to my bank and I would say, hi guys, Apple says this code isn't valid. They're like, no, it's valid, because we get a lot of transfers every day through this. And I mean, I'm not using like the local bank of Hackensack, New Jersey. This is actually a reputable bank. And so I just kept going back and forth, and eventually it got to the point where the people at my bank said, here, give this number to the Apple people, have them call us, and we'll work it out. And I sent it to them, and they said, well, sorry, we can only interact with you. And I finally just, I had my fill of it. So that's a lot better now, because they don't do the wire stuff. So when I put my bank account information back in a couple of weeks ago, I actually got a nice little deposit from all that money I had made before. All that money, not that much, from before, because it just transferred into my account. So that's better. I still wish that there was a better way to contact Apple than having to email them with your issues. I wish that they would offer tiered accounts. So you can have the $99 account, but I want to be able to pay $500 a year and have a priority developer account, so that I can have a phone number, so I can just call someone and say, all right, this is the issue I have, help me fix it, or my $500 gets me higher up in the queue of review. So it's better, but it's not perfect still. There's still a lot of things that they could do a lot better, but it's not enough for me to complain about it too much. I'm trying not to complain as much. I hope it's coming off that way.
Well, I don't think people would put you down as a complainer, would they?
Well,
just waiting for the laughing to stop.
Yeah.
There we are. Okay, let's move on. let's move on. We can't do a show without talking about this at the moment, and we've already mentioned it, the Mac App Store. Now, it seems to me that in some ways, with the type of products you produce, which are, you know, they tend to be smaller, as you said, productivity, do one or two things just really well in a way that makes your life easy. Surely that's just, you know, exactly what the Mac App Store is going to be great for.
Yeah, I'm excited about the Mac App Store, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet. I keep waffling on. When it first came out, I went through the stages of denial, and I was like, "Whoa, this is terrible. This is no, I don't want to do this. This is no, bad, evil, no." And then I kind of came around, and I was like, "Well, this is actually probably a good thing, because it's going to get your software in front of a lot of more people." And I thought, "Well, why don't we put the applications in the store entirely?" And that's the entire distribution mechanism. No more selling the applications on my own store. Let's just put them on that Mac App Store and call it a day. And I thought about that for a while, but the issue of not having trials, the paid upgrade thing being questionable, and then kind of the iOS staples of having in-app purchases and iAds aren't there. And in some of my cases, I think that would be beneficial to my apps. So now I'm starting to wonder, do I even want to get my apps in the store at launch, or do I just want to sit back, let them get the bugs out until around the spring or early summer when Lion's getting closer, and then get new versions of the application? So get today 3 polished up and ready to go, and then put that on the App Store and make a big splash there. I haven't decided entirely yet. I'm excited about the App Store. I'm probably going to buy most of my software through the App Store just because it makes updating a lot easier. But given how little time I have at this point, because I have so many things going on at once, I'm wondering if I should just sit back and let things work themselves out and let everyone else deal with the growing pains that are inevitably going to be there. I mean, you can't open up an entirely new distribution mechanism and not have some things not go a little bit haywire. So it's still up in the air. I'm still watching and seeing what everyone else is doing, and then I'll finally decide. It could be that they say the App Store is going to open up in 2 weeks, and then I'll just, on the whim, I'll like, all right, let's sit here and spend the next week or two getting things polished up so that I can get them in the App Store.
So do you think that we're going to be, I know it's not necessarily there yet, but do you think we're heading towards a sort of freemium model on the Mac as well, where people are going to be expecting to buy functionality piecemeal because that's what we're learning off the phone and the iPad?
I think in some cases there are going to be applications like that. I think like the classic example is the Twitter market. I think if you try to put out a new Twitter application today, you're going to have a really hard time saying that it's a time-based trial and it's $15 because there's so many free options out there that are ad supported. So if you're building a new Twitter application, and if you are, you're crazy, but if you are, I think the best way to do that would be to put it in the store for free using iAds or some other ad platform and having an in-app purchase to disable those ads for the people that don't want it. In my case, I mean, I've thought about having a free version of Today, my little calendar application, and putting that on the store with ads and then having an unlockable saying, all right, you don't want the ads or you want some extra features, buy Today Pro for $24.95. But I don't see every application going that way. I think you've got the Omni Group apps. I don't think you're ever going to see them do freemium models because those are applications. They are large applications that serve specific purposes for productivity and getting your work done. So if you're building consumer-facing stuff that's more like a cooking application or a to-do list application, something that's more general appeal, I could see it going more towards that. But for business productivity and things like that, I don't think we're going to see too many freemium apps.
So what's your prediction for when the App Store launches? Are we going to see a huge rush of existing apps coming out, or do you think it's going to be a huge rush of sort of new apps coming from iPhone developers, so tiny little apps that are just being thrown out there, or maybe some bigger ones? Do you feel that the majority of the existing developers might do exactly what you're doing and sit back and just think about how this is going to affect their sales, and therefore how much is that then going to affect people's perception of it if actually, a lot of the apps that they would name as great apps out there are actually in the App Store?
I don't think you're going to see too many new applications on day one for the App Store, especially I don't think you're going to see too many of them from iPhone developers, because like we mentioned before, building a Mac app is a completely different ballgame, because AppKit is a lot bigger set of frameworks. It's a lot older, so there's a lot of weird stuff that it does compared to UIKit. The one thing that would make me happy in Lion is if a lot of the UIKit functionality and paradigms shifted back to the Mac so that code could be a little bit more understandable and I wouldn't have to think, all right, well, this is how you do this on the Mac and this is how you do this on the iPhone. But I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of new applications. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a ton of Mac applications on day one from people that have had their Mac applications they've been selling on their own store for forever, and they're going to be out there. They're all going to be in there, and some of them are going to get featured, but a lot of them, they're just going to get lost in the shuffle, and what they think is going to be this big boom of sales because there's this new platform for distribution. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are disappointed when they don't get as many new sales as they thought they were, because from what I've seen, there's no improvement on the searching and finding of software aspects of the Mac App Store, just like it's really impossible to find anything of quality on the iPhone App Store unless it's been featured or you just hear a recommendation from your friends on Twitter or Facebook. So I hope that will change going down the road. I think it will. I definitely envision a day where Apple is going to say, all right, the only way to get trusted, quote-unquote, applications for your Mac is through the Mac App Store. I can see them doing that someday, and I think at that point it's going to be make a lot of sense to get your applications in there, but getting in there on day one, I don't think there's going to be as many benefits as people are touting that there will be.
Okay, going to wrap up with just a couple more questions from the chat room, and then we'll close down. Someone wants to know, how does the balance of your sales between Mac and iOS devices, what sort of proportion are they in?
Right now, I'm making more money off the iPhone, which I never really imagined that I would. But yeah, the main, I think right now it's, I'm doing it in my head, once we get the spike out of my... So once you get out of the spike, I think I'm making twice as much right now on the iPhone that I am on the Mac, which is crazy because I never would have envisioned that before. So I am putting a lot of my focus right now in the Mac, in the iPhone applications just because they have the most growth right now. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to go back to building them on the Mac applications. If I could make as much money on the Mac as I can on the iPhone, I'd build Mac applications on all day. And I think I could. It's just right now the focus is on this new platform, and I've got these new applications out there that are doing relatively well. But I'm definitely thinking about, well, Elements, that could make sense on the Mac. I'd love to build a Mac version of Elements. It's just I don't have time to right now.
Okay. I mean, do you think with Lion coming along and, you know, let's ask this about next year's WWDC, that we're going to maybe just get a restoration of balance of talk, at least between the Mac and iOS, and that in its own way is just going to help a little bit?
I don't think so. I think you're going to see more Mac applications, but I don't think you're going to see parity, because there's just so many more iPhones and iPod Touches and iPads out there compared to Macs. I think you're going to see a lot of the developers that were on the Mac and then shifted away to just building iPhone applications coming back to the Mac, because they kind of got that taste of, oh, wow, I don't have to deal with serial numbers anymore. I don't have to deal with running my own merchant account or setting up a store on Kagi or FastSpring. This is great. I've had this Mac idea in my head for a while. I can now build it and not have to worry with the headaches anymore. So I think that's going to get more people to build Mac applications, but I don't think you're going to see this giant growth of the platform unless Apple just starts selling hand over fist millions upon millions upon millions of these new 11-inch MacBook Airs. But you're going to see a rise in the Mac platform, but you're not going to see exponential growth like you did with the iPhone or the iPad.
Okay, that's really interesting. I guess we have to remember that people have made a living off producing Mac software for a long time, now there are a lot more Macs than there used to be, so it should still be possible.
I know, it's crazy, because when I started building Mac software back in the Jaguar days, or as Steve used to call it, the Jaguar days, I think the Mac market share was 2 or 3%, and now, what is it right now? I think it's like 9 or 11%. That's crazy. I never imagined.
Yeah, and it's just 20% in laptops.
Yeah, if you would have told me 5 years ago that that would be the case now, I might have said maybe, but I wouldn't have. I would have said maybe, kind of with rolling my eyes. And now it's a reality, and it's just there's so many more people to sell Mac software to, which is great. But I think the iPhone and the iPad, those are going to grow even more, just because they're even more accessible and even more affordable. So. Both are great platforms. The big win is for Cocoa developers, just because we can jump between the platforms a lot easier than I think other developers on other platforms can.
Well, I mean, we need to wrap this up. We're trying to keep the show to around 45 minutes because we've gone back to weekly and we don't want to run on too long. But it is late enough in the year now, and I know I've given you no warning of this, but we're late enough in the year now for me to ask you, what is your big prediction for 2011?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. I think we're going to see a resurgence in Mac development. And I think the Mac App Store is going to be the claim to fame for that. Just because you don't see too many announcements these days about new Mac applications coming out. And when you do, you see the sites like Macworld or Daring Fireball. They flock to write about it because they're just inundated with press releases about, oh, there's 1,000 new Mac or iPhone applications out there today. But, oh, hey, this guy built a new Mac application. Let's write about it. I think we're going to start seeing more Mac applications come out over the next year, just because Lion is going to get a lot of attention. The Mac App Store is going to get a lot of attention. So I think we'll see a resurgence in that platform. But I still think that you're going to see even more people coming to the iPhone and the iPad as a platform in general. But as a Mac user and as a Mac developer, I'm really excited about that. I've definitely got ideas for what I want to do on the Mac over the next year. And I'm really intrigued to see what kind of developer goodies Apple has in store for Lion.
Well, there we are, folks. You heard it here first. The big prediction for 2011. The first iDeveloper Live 2011 prediction. The restoration of the Mac app. Justin, it's been great speaking to you. Just remind us where people can find your stuff. Try and get one more plug in for your products. You've done really well. You're a great marketer.
Oh, thank you. So if you want to find anything, just go to secondgearsoftware.com, and all the iPhone and the Mac applications are listed there. If you want to just sample something for free, Shareables is the free application. So just go on the iTunes store and search for Shareables. If you are a developer, there is a kind of quasi SDK. So if you've got a Twitter application or some other application that would benefit from sharing functionality, we have a public URL scheme and you can add support for that. And some of the applications that you probably use every day have added share with shareable support in upcoming releases. So I'm really excited about that because when I built the application, I was part of it was I wanted to have this public URL scheme because there was a lot of applications that I was using that I wanted to be able to have others add sharing buttons with so I could send stuff easily from an application into Facebook or Twitter. So secondgearsoftware.com, or if you want to hear me ramble online, just go to twitter.com/Justin.
Well, thank you very much, Justin. It's great having you on. And I've been Steve Scott. I have no idea who I am. It's the end of the week. I am Scotty from iDeveloper TV. We produce video training for Mac, iPhone, and iPad developers. We're not prejudiced. We love you all. Just come to our site, iDeveloper.tv, and press that buy button and give me cash. That's not subtle marketing, but hopefully it will work. There we go. This has been iDeveloper Live episode 4. Not sure what's happening next week. It's Thanksgiving. Maybe we'll skip it. Depends what's around. So just keep an eye out for the tweets and see. You can follow iDeveloper TV and the sort of show and video release news by following iDeveloper TV on Twitter. If you want to follow my own sort of ramblings and weirdness, then I'm MacDevNet. Until next time, you take care.